Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
Hi, everyone. This is Jenny, and welcome to this episode of the Cathedral Podcast. You know, the education system in Singapore has a glowing report card. We take 3% of the GDP, we spend it on education, it comes up to about $13 billion for a small island state. We boast 99% literacy rate, that's like almost everybody in Singapore can read. We place consistently in the first few places in the PISA scores, which is the worldwide study by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development to evaluate educational systems by measuring 15-year-olds. Okay, and of course, Singapore math is quite known and used worldwide, and our higher institutions of learning are delivering breakthroughs in STEM and much more. So we are rejoicing in our education system. It's a great report card. But we also know that this has come at the cost of another side of the story, which is we have a billion-dollar industry called tuition. And we have what is known in our social phenomenon as kiasu parents, which is the local slang for competitive parenting. And arguably, our kids are experiencing increasing emotional and mental strain. So I thought it would be very important for us to take a step back and discuss what education really is all about. And for our conversation today, I've invited a good friend of mine. Her name is Dawn Fung. Hi, Dawn.
Hi.
Dawn, I first know her as a folk singer and then discovered later that she is an educator. She's married to a pastor and she's now a mom of three children. The youngest one, George is, Paul is how old now?
Paul's two.
Nearly two? Already two?
Wow, already sorry two.
Sorry to confuse your husband with your son, but we know what it's like. Okay. So we want to talk about education. I mean, education is such a given, it's so prized and all that. But, you know, actually, what is education? What's your take on it, Dawn?
Oh, it's a big word. I'll start with saying education is an essentially contested concept. That means nobody has a monopoly on how to define it. The variations are too many. We can come to a major consensus on what education should include as a formal program. We are on safer ground for this question. So I would say that education has these components. Number one, it's a direction of what you want to achieve, your vision. Number two, what needs to be learned? This is your curriculum. Mm-hmm. Number three, who will deliver the curriculum? Your teachers. Mm. Number four, who wants to learn the content? Your students. And number five, how successful did your students learn? That's your assessment. So I think these 5 points are broad enough to cover what education is like in most of the urban developed world, especially Singapore, which favors clear structure and order of how things progress. Although MOE has a vision, people on the ground feel that the outcome of our education still is about creating efficient workers for the economy. Seems like the best goal to the civil service or the financial private sectors and niche service providers that pay a lot, like a lawyer, a surgeon, you know, and everyone else, you find your lot somewhere. So yeah. when we think about education in Singapore, we cannot avoid thinking that where you end up defines you, because somehow the best and the brightest rule and reign the country. Mm. And I have to say bluntly that power and wealth are attractive. So in terms of competitive parenting, this is the fight to the top, isn't it? Mm. But which means our children are not our prize, but our prized fighters. Mm. The real prize is the desire for either your family or for your children to be admitted into powerful, wealthy positions for whatever reason.
Wow, excellent.
So it is a very interesting, I suppose it's an interesting paradigm to think about church as well. And I can't help but think that the church does sort itself out via the education system too. When I look at the English-speaking churches, well, statistically, they are more affluent and the churchgoers are more well-traveled compared to, say, the congregation at the Filipino services. And I see wealthier Filipino expats prefer to be English-speaking services too. So there are certain ways we categorize ourselves. And I wonder if we categorize ourselves firstly according to language, which is quite clear-cut. And secondly, employment maybe. Mm. And our services are so efficiently run. Slow, unwieldy church services with sermons that overrun are unattractive. Singaporeans don't like it. Because we have planned family lunches. We have outings. The kids need nap time. The church needs to run like clockwork to gain approval from a congregation that doesn't have enough time for a lot of things. And if you hire a venue, you have to stop service at a certain time too. So how would I describe the Singapore church? It is organized, sophisticated, and efficient, just as how we are educated. So our nation's Christians are, according to the list I shared, well-educated. The components are set according to the state's direction, and the church is made up of mostly citizens who grew up with these directives. But a key question is, are we happy with the outcome?
Yes, excellent. Thank you so much for a very comprehensive and robust start to this conversation. You mentioned a couple of things that I picked up, which I think I would like to pose as questions to our listeners. You mentioned whether children are our prize or our prize fighters. I think that's a very pertinent question. And then in your discussion about church and how it is in some sense a product of our society, it reflects the cultural societal norms. We have efficiency, productivity, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It reflects our cultural norms in society, the wealthier, the poorer, and all that. And I think that these things do kind of meet in this space called education, because education is where you raise, you form, you shape the next generation. That's why this conversation is actually very critical. And we all know, I remember when I was growing up in school, you know, like you want to study, you don't want to study, that kind of thing. No, I don't come from a very educated background. We're actually very poor. So there wasn't a lot of guidance. But I remember that by the time I hit university and I thought back about how everybody was going through a funnel and being sorted out. And then I learned this concept called social engineering, right? And then it was a bit disheartening for me because I felt like, gosh, I'm just this cog, this huge machinery. Somewhere along the way, the system is just directing my life, whether I like it or not. And the educational system was directing it for many years of my life. So I think that is something for us to be aware of. And because as Christians, we believe that our lives are a gift from God. We believe that we are called to steward our lives and to steward the lives of our children. So if we bring this notion of stewardship against this whole backdrop that society is organized in a particular way for survival, defined in terms of economic terms, you know, at, you know, when you cut to the chase, that's where it really is. It's all about economics. It's about how, and that those decisions are being made by only a select group of people. What are some, what are some other things we could bring to this conversation then as Christian parents, you know, in view of the fact that we think in terms of stewardship, in terms of destiny? We can't, I mean, run away from the social engineering to some extent, but I think it's like this other piece of the conversation is completely missing. Yeah. Would you like to share some of your thoughts on that?
Yes, I have many thoughts on that. I do feel it's a shame that the children are missing from the stake, having a stake in the conversation. We all believe that as adults, we know what is best for children, but none of us actually do surveys and ask children what they want. And I thought, how is it that we miss this crucial piece of the puzzle? Children are highly responsive, intelligent, creative. I think any parent who has children would admire the creative wiring of kids. I don't think anybody can say kids are not creative. So how is it that they can't be part of a conversation that provides solutions as well, right? And one of our struggles as parents is to raise up happy children, in an education system that we hope that would bring up happy learners. Unfortunately, what I see in the education system as a teacher and as a parent who teach my own is that kids grow up less and less happy learning, and which is worrisome, because happy learners become happy adults, and that has a lot of implications for society. So perhaps I would like to think that with the missing voice from the children, they are made to do something that they don't want to do. And I would say that our children perform learning for our approval, but it may not mean that they enjoy doing so. What I see also is so many children growing up disheartened and feeling unloved in the education system. They carry a sense that they are never good enough. I mean, that is perhaps one part of your story. And yeah, that is also a part of the story. You know, I grew up feeling being sorted and feeling that I can only go this way. I didn't feel like I was winning in the system. I feel like I was just overlooked. And I don't think I'm the only one. And this unresolved tension haunts children into their future as parents. I mean, we are some of that examples. So we perpetuate our own narratives. Children believe what adults tell them about them, and that's innocence for you. Maybe I would like to uncover an ugly truth. Do we tell children that they are uniquely created with their own giftings, but not follow up with sound education practices that reflect what we say? I mean, Jesus Christ calls this hypocrisy. The Pharisees and Sadducees were condemned by him for saying things they don't act on, but expect others to. So I feel that as a Christian in the education system today, anyone who's a stakeholder, whether you are parent, tutor, teacher, principal, staff, thought leader, you have authority over young lives, and you need to be very prudent with your decisions because they affect so many innocent lives. Is what you are advocating right now in education in line with biblical treatment of children? Would the program lead to adult yokes being put on young children totally unaligned to their developmental paces? Would the structure of our education improvement forbid children from resting? That is something that always alarms me, that we keep growing their academic ability, but something is taken from them in that equation. You know, studies show that children need at least 4 hours of play and outdoor exposure daily. I don't see that they are kept indoors all the time, and that has implications for their health. So are we shortchanging their childhood by good intentions, you know? And as teachers and tutors, are we insisting unrealistically that homework, which is really after work hours for kids, is compulsory? I mean, we all have some vague idea that homework can bond the family. Parents can do homework with the kids and it would be happy. I've never seen that, okay? I've just seen a lot of shouting.
I can only tell. Yes, I totally agree with you. Yes. It's a war zone. I think most parents will agree.
I don't see the outcome as bonding. So why does a government agency or any organization have so much control over children and parents' private time at home? Is it because they know better than what the families know? I mean, these are questions we need to think about. So I feel Christians ought to take responsibility for their actions in the educational positions they hold. We are a city on a hill that cannot be hidden. What are we championing? And if our faith tells us to love God above all things, then surely our nation will prosper, especially our children, if we follow that line.
Yeah. Thank you for cutting to the chase and going to the heart of things, isn't it? I think that's a very sobering thing that you brought up, you know, the whole truth about hypocrisy. I think sometimes it's easy in church for us to hold to certain what we call evident truths, you know, God loves us, each child is unique and all that. But it's just hard when you are part of a system, you are part of this ongoing reality, you're part of the rat race, to really, you know, like, actually, what do I really believe by that? How is my life living that truth out, you know? And that's why we have podcasts like this. Yeah. So it's good. I think, you know, I mean, when we have long school holidays in the middle of the year and the end of the year, while it's great to go on family vacations, those might be really important times for parents and educators to also take stock. I don't see us easily like overhauling the systems, but overnight, I mean, the reality that to some degree, an educational system must serve the needs of society as it were, can remain, but you're right. We got to ask some important questions. We got to search our hearts, both in terms of the outcomes we want, but also in terms of how we are going about it. So this is where I want to move the conversation as well. Sure, the outcomes might be, we want our kids to flourish. We want them to succeed. And sure, we do want the economy to thrive and to be balanced, whatever, you know, the enlightened ones tell us, which we have to accept because we did elect them into office. But at the same time, though, I think there's also the how. There's also the actual mechanics of day by day, how we go about it. That can make a huge difference. I mean, all of us work, we know. You know, we don't like unengaged workers. They are never productive. They never bring anything really excellent to the table. But we are, if we perpetuate a system, like you say, where the kids are unengaged, and I've seen this happen to my own children. Okay, when once we start preparing them for the national exam, it was like the death of learning, death of the love of learning for them. Before my very eyes, and this is a story that's repeated over and over again in our wonderful
country. Over and over again.
Yeah. And so therefore I think cannot one of the first things we do be, how are we going about this? You know, just in our daily conversations with our kids, just in is tuition really necessary, for example?
I would not even touch tuition first. I would say that the paradigms, the way we compare classroom to workplace is awful. How can we, you know, we want to prepare our children for work readiness, that one I can understand, but to compare the classroom to a work setting and to say that they have to be engaged as workers next time is wrong. We are setting wrong KPIs on children who are not yet adults. And in the Singapore laws, a young person can legally work when they are 14. So if you want to introduce work readiness, I would say start the conversation at 14. But before that, let the children be children. The problem is we try to turn out little workers when they are not little workers. They are human beings in smaller size with different developmental milestones, and we haven't respected that. A child is that stage of your human life where you experience life differently and where you ask different questions and where you see the world very different from how an adult sees, and you don't engage it in the way that adult does. Why does an adult need a child to engage it in the way that adult does?
So when we talk to our children in their upper primary school about career preparation, I think we don't do that in primary school. We do it in secondary school. But you're right, because it's to start in secondary school. Yes, at the curriculum level, I think we start in secondary school, but it's also what you're raising is important, because sometimes as parents, that is at the back of our heads. Like we're looking at our kid and say, I want my little Timmy to be a lawyer one day, you know, and and you grow like, you know, and so you're right, you know, it's very natural for us because we have already become adults and we are workers, that we are stuck in that paradigm and we bring that paradigm. So how can parents sort of like wake themselves up and catch themselves doing it? And when they do, what can they do?
Well, I would say for a start, be clear with your survey answers. How many friends did you know growing up ended up in the career that they wanted as children? That's one. Number two, how many of them packed their lives, their marriage partners, their future plans to their PSLE scores? If you can find zero, then you cannot expect your child to even fulfill that unrealistic expectation that you don't see in anybody around you. I mean, that is a basic science skill, isn't it? You see the phenomenon around you, you research and you take evidence and you create some strong theories. Our theories about children are still not robust. It's all based on some illusion in our head. And part of it is forcing an adult narrative onto children. And you're saying that I am going to peg my child's interest to a career right now. I have never seen that work for any child. Unless you want them to be really unhappy because you have just pushed them and sorted them into the career that they never signed up for, but something you designed. And I think that is, I mean, as a Christian, I would say you are making a child in the image that is not of God. Whose image are you making? And will that person be happy? Because that is not a divine narrative, you know? And if you can have very clear truth about that sort of questions, right? That some of the kiasu parents will stop being kiasu. Because when we talk about competition and we talk about kiasu parenting, I found that parents fall into a few categories. Not everybody who seems kiasu are having the same approach. There are parents who have certain aspirations for their children that if a child can swim very well, he or she will become a national swimmer, become Joseph Schooling, and become rich. There is that kind of linear kiasu parent. But there are also kiasu parents who are on board simply because they don't know what else to do. And if you can help them make sense of the questions in their mind, they can let go of that stress. We want to be able to make sense of this parenting journey, but also bring in that godly element of respecting how God made children.
Yeah.
And I remember that in the Bible, Jesus Christ welcomed the children, but not his disciples. That's very interesting.
Yeah, that's very interesting indeed.
Yeah.
You're right. So I think when we forget our own childhood, Jesus actually says when he welcomes the children, right, that you got to become like a child. I think that statement is so loaded. It's so loaded. And I think we haven't taken time to unpack it enough. But we have reversed the story. We have like, now that I've succeeded as an adult, I know better, you know, and I will therefore both project and impose. Not sometimes being aware enough that we carry quite a lot of baggage as well as delusions and maybe broken dreams and all that sort of things. And our children have to bear the all that yoke that is not the yoke that, like you say, Jesus meant for them to carry, suited for their developmental pace and phase that they're in. Yeah. So what about on a daily basis? What are some, you know, practical things parents can do to resist this, you know, ingrained tendency to be in touch with the more godly narrative? What would you advise parents to do?
I have a spectrum of advice, and the most extreme one is to overturn the system that your child finds very painful to be in. I think that's godly. And let me explain, all right? You see, we have a tension of wanting to fit in with society to gain approval. And yet, as believers, we want to please God in our calling and lifestyle to Him where fitting in may not work. It is a fine daily conversation, but you mentioned the word conversation, and I think that's a good word because that is the gentlest, most cogent way of dealing with conflict in Singapore. Non-violent, articulate mediation. That is also the Singapore Mediation Convention scaled down to the personal level, right? We learn to settle disagreements within ourselves to one another as peacefully and orderly as possible. And as Singaporean citizens, we're very used to less aggressive measures. So if we're unhappy, we write letters, you know, we complain and we write letters to the principal, we WhatsApp, but we don't really come to fisticuffs. That's a good thing. I don't want anybody to fight and injure one another, right?
Yep.
But it comes to a point where if you have a child who really cannot fit into the system that you have signed in up for, consider changing the system. Consider taking him out. Consider putting him somewhere else. And it is biblical because you are has made him to be, and you're just finding something that fits. Your allegiance must never be to a system. Your allegiance must be to Christ, and Christ to the child. So I think this is where the tension comes in. Whose approval matters more, and is it okay to say no to what mainstream mainstream wants you to do and for your child. Because God didn't give society your child, God gave you your child. You are the parent of the child, and that is your responsibility. And I believe God gives parents certain wisdom and instincts to protect their child. So let me bring it somewhere a bit more extreme. The downside is we forget Jesus overturned tables in the temple courts when he dealt with corruption and got crucified as an innocent. I'm not saying children are going to be crucified, but there is the presence of violence in that theology, in advocacy, particularly advocacy towards injustice. So yes, we don't advocate violence towards fellow men, but towards the supernatural dark forces, authorities that govern the world system. Yet, I think if you have to overturn an unjust system for your child, if you have to replace it, the effects could be violent. Violent in a way that invites criticism, that invites a lot of arguments, but perhaps that is needful. Because if they are needful, and when you think about Christ overturning the tables, would you have a problem seeing the love of God in that gesture?
I know what you're saying, yeah. Mm. I think you are right, because there is a very important element in faith called courage. And courage is when you are shown something, you know, it's right. You know, that's the way. You see obstacles and you say, I have to get past those obstacles. And in the process of getting past those obstacles, it appears violent. Like the way Jesus overturned the tables, it appears violent. It may even feel a bit violent. Let's say if you have objections from your family members. I know friends who chose to do what you suggested. They left the system. And they get a lot of criticism. They get no support sometimes from the people that they need the support from. And that's a form of, in a way, a form of violence because it's lonesome and it's really hard. But I take your point that sometimes for the sake of the child, you need to really free your imagination up and say, what really needs to be done? And of course, I suppose you're not advocating anybody does this lightly. And it's not an easy decision. So probably having honest conversations where we are vulnerable, that our child is not doing so well, and being able to, you know, really talk about what that unwellness is, how it's being experienced and all that. Because in a way, we don't have time to go too much into that, but in a way, I think the only conversation we have right now when our kids don't fit into the system is, are they struggling with certain things within themselves? Do they have ADHD and ADD and, you know, that kind of thing? And it's always like there's something wrong with the child. Not so much something wrong with the system, because it's actually it's just a big system. It was not designed for that child. It's just designed as an average system for the average child, you know. So yeah, so that's another very huge conversation to have. But okay, picking up on what you said about leaving the system. Right now, Dawn, you founded Homeschool Singapore. You speak all over the world and conferences about homeschooling. You organize activities for a community of homeschoolers in Singapore. So I think that homeschool is still relatively new in Singapore, and maybe you could educate us on why that is a viable alternative system and actually what happens in that space.
Okay. Homeschooling, I think after COVID, everybody has sort of heard of homeschooling. Prior to COVID, I would come across people who say, homeschooling, is that legal? Do your kids have friends? What does MOE say? It's usually these three questions, and I have a set of ready answers, right? Because I hear it so often. In today's time, after COVID, I think people are seeing possibilities and alternative settings for their children. And if it works, why not? I've had parents who write to me and say, hey, my kid actually enjoys learning from home a lot more. What is the option like for homeschooling? So homeschooling is recognized in Singapore. It comes under the Compulsory Education Act for especially 6 to 12 years old. So if you want to apply for homeschooling, you have to write to the MOE Compulsory Education Unit for a form, and they would assess whether you are suitable. That is a out there, in my opinion, whether a parent is suitable to teach their own. I think I I think parents fight and love their own child very, very much. Fight for and love their own child very much. Very few parents I know will not give the best to their children. So a homeschooling parent who chooses that path actually has high aspirations for their children. They are not trying to escape difficulty, but they want something better.
What would be some of the motivations for people to homeschool then?
Okay. There are push and pull factors. And let me just say that not everybody who homeschools for the same reasons and for the same amount of time. Some people just wanted to homeschool for that year. Some people just want to homeschool for primary school and then send the kid back to secondary school. There are variations. Again, education has variations, right? So when you think about why people want to homeschool, number one, it is the only alternative education available to Singapore citizens. Outside of the MOE system, you can't send your kids to an international school because it's disallowed, unless you maybe have a lot of money or find some backdoor. But if you want to get out of it, homeschooling is the only option. And it's a very attractive option, especially for three groups of people that I've found in my homeschooling journey. Number one are ex-teachers. There are a high number of ex-teachers from MOE that has found homeschooling reignited their passion for education. Mm. And why do I say that? I think people who choose to teach usually don't do it for the money, because really teaching is a people care job. That means you must care enough for kids to want to hang in there and face all the crisis that goes on in the classroom. There is a certain desire to see people grow. So teachers who come out of the system and feel disillusioned may have had their ideals maybe challenged by the limitations, but it doesn't mean they don't love teaching. They just wanted to seek another way, I think. And if they homeschool, it means they want to try it out on their kids. So a lot of teachers, when they homeschool, they find their passion for teaching come alive again, because they are able to call the shots. They're able to control a lot of things that previously they weren't able to. For example, like the number of people you can teach. I mean, a lot of homeschooling parents teach each other's children. And teaching in a group of five is very different from teaching a class of 40.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And it doesn't mean you're a lousy teacher. It just means that a lot of your teaching abilities have been subdued because of forces outside of your control. Yeah. Right? And then another thing is also the curriculum. You every teacher has their own labor and their own way of making a child's learning very vibrant, but the curriculum may not fit every teacher's style. So if suddenly you find something that fit yours, you are a change maker in the lives of the children around you, because suddenly you feel that the materials work in your favor, the pedagogy work in your favor, and you really, really enjoy teaching for whatever those ideals were in the first place. I love the second group are special needs. Parents of special needs kids. Special needs kids need customized attention and care. A one-to-one, one-to-two setting works really well in their favor. And also a lot of them has sensory processing disorder. So they are very, very sensitive to a lot of things, a lot of stimulations around them in a classroom, which is frankly just overwhelming. And why would you want the children to be in a place that's overwhelming and they cannot learn? Take them out of the system so that they can learn at a pace that they feel comfortable and they can win. That's what we want in education. We want every child to win, right? Mm. So the ones who fit in school, stay in school, and the ones who don't fit, come out and do something else, right? But at the end of the day, everybody gets an education. The third group of people are parents who just don't see, who have a certain vision for their family, and they find that schooling doesn't fit that vision. I give you an example. A family that wants to travel, and the traveling forms part of their curriculum. So as I travel, my kids get to see this is our geography and we're going to learn from real life examples. The school won't be able to do that for you. You have to ask permission from 1001 parents and fill in forms. And by the time you get onto the bus, you go to the zoo 2 hours and you come back. For parents who have a certain dream of family education, homeschooling allows them the freedom. How about another family that has children who are maybe very with high aptitude in a certain area like chess or sports? It being in a school system may not work for them. What if they can spend many hours just focusing on the area of interest they're good at? Then they move all the way. See, and how about parents who feel that religion should be a core conversation of their curriculum, and they want to examine their faith from there? Homeschooling gives you the space to also think about that a lot more. Yeah. There are very few, or I haven't come across any religious radicalized zealots in the homeschooling community, which is
that's
probably
one of
the
accusations you get, is it?
I know. And I'm going to tell you a very ugly story as well. I asked a homeschooling parent who used to work as a prison warden. He said, how many of those people in prison were homeschooled? He says, none. So I mean, if homeschooling leads to radicalization and radicalization leads to crime, well, where are they? You know, and I think we have to think very, very carefully about what we assume people to be just because they choose one way or another. Perhaps this conversation, I mean, as I say, I'm thinking, so who really is responsible for a child's education? Where is the agency of that influencer? And it really comes down to the parent, isn't it? The parent is the one with the most agency and responsibility over the child. And I have to say that in school, parents feel disempowered. A lot of times they feel that they're helpless and they cannot change the things that they see are wrong. And I feel that if I'm not going to speak up for homeschooling this time, I'm going to speak up for all the stakeholders in the education landscape this time. Why can't there be hybrid systems where parents get a bigger say? Why can't there be systems where teachers who are really energetic and full of ideas start their own schools within schools, start their own programs? I mean, why can't we trust people? Why can't we trust people with all these great ideas? Yeah. Why can't we trust parents to come up with good solutions for the school as well? Why can't they be a main part of the school conversation rather than a peripheral part? You know what I mean? And then bring in the kids.
I totally know what you mean because I've tried that. Well, I mean, you know, there is the very huge bureaucracy that sometimes you're confronted with. And I think the other ugly truth is after we are part of a system for a while, we do start imbibing how the system operates. And
you stop speaking up for the child.
Things do get a bit obfuscated. Not to mention everybody is tired. So, you know, so I think there's really like... When we look at this whole question, I think there's been quite a lot of agitation from the ground about education in Singapore. And there's been some good response from the authorities. But this is clearly an ongoing conversation that is necessary. And I do hope that Christian parents can be at the forefront of this conversation, because we have a theology that tells us that every person is made in the image of God, that our lives are valuable, precious, prized, and that we are gifts to the world. And we should therefore really make stewarding our lives and the lives of our children, whether as parents or as a larger faith community, a very serious priority. So I'm very grateful, Dawn, to have this conversation with you. Yeah, you have some parting comments. I know plenty more you can say. But give us some parting comments that you feel strongly that you want to say to Christian parents in particular.
I think if our faith has power, then faith as small as a mustard seed can move mountains. Yeah. If if you have an ongoing conversation with God and he tells you how you should lead your child and you feel fearful, but I want to say trust God. He knows what is best. And if that direction leads you to shift a system or to replace the system so that it works for your child, trust the outcome of God. Because God's ways are higher than our ways. And I think he wants the best for everyone. And if we all do our best to trust God above man and what we see, I believe we can prosper the nation.
Mm. Thank you so much. And on that note, I think we are both agreed, Dawn and I, that prospering the nation is not necessarily perpetuating the status quo, having more of the same. But I think God always has great plans for every people group, every nation. You know, when God raises a nation, he has plans for that nation. I think he has wonderful plans for Singapore, right? And where he places us, right where we are here in Southeast Asia. And every single one of our children play a part in that plan.
Mm.
So, wow, yes. It's exciting. I think it's a real blessing, as well as a very high, noble and holy calling to be a parent. I believe that personally, strongly myself. I know, Dawn, you do too. That's why you are leading that homeschool network. It's so much work. And I thank you for being such a brave heart to live out your convictions and to share them, share some of them with us. So if you're listening in, you can look out for Dawn Fung. That's F-U-N-G. She has a website. And you can find her also on Facebook to learn more about education, learn more in particular about homeschooling, and just explore what values do you really hold on to. And before we end this conversation, I think we all know that idolatry is always very close by. And as Christians, as Dawn reminded us, our first allegiance is always to God. So just want to encourage everybody to do that. We just need to check our hearts and know that we have the Lord on our side to empower us to do that, which may require courage, may require us to step away from what has always been done to try something new. And I also want to plug my little book, Simple Tips for Happy Kids, because a happy childhood is so important foundation. We also know that as we see just the issues in our society. So thank you again, Dawn, so much for being with us. We just want to bless you and the work that you're doing. The ground is shifting as you work hard, caring for all these families in your network and caring for your own special three. I know one of them is taking PSLE this year. Yeah, so all the best. God bless you. And God bless all of you for listening in.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.